Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now, my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. Obviously, the Cavs just had a really weird game against the Raptors, a fun one, where they won by 45 points, despite being down several key players, because, boy, were the Raptors down a few more. Let's just say the Raptors would kill for a Denzel Valentine on that roster right now.
Yes, and the Raptors were basically one of the only teams in a worse position than the Cavs. I believe they were
about as wiped out. I think it was the worst, like, no disrespect to those players, it's just like the least talented roster I've seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just
absolutely
had, it wasn't fair.
Yeah, they were missing the first 9 or 10 guys out of their rotation, which is tough. One of the players shared that they met some of the replacement players on the bus to the arena that they had not met prior to then. So, yeah, it was definitely a tough situation.
Yeah, because, like, at least the Cavs have Darius and Kevin and Laurie and Ricky. Like, they had, Justin Anderson did have to play 31 minutes, but, like, it's just different when you have, like, that level of continuity in.
Absolutely, and I feel like the universe took one from us and gave one to us. With the Boston game, I felt like the Cavs were just a little too shorthanded. I think the Cavs...
I was honestly considering just doing a quick, like, universe took versus universe gave, like, calculation of the year so far. Because there have been a few where the Cavs just had no shot because the basketball gods cursed them with injuries or COVID or whatever it might be. And then there were a few where their opponent had just no shot. I mean, I think about that Milwaukee game. I think about the Toronto game.
Yeah.
I think the Cavs have broken around even there, which I think is pretty encouraging given, you know, that you're looking for reasons why some of these numbers aren't real. Mm-hmm. Now, these enormous blowout wins are not real. Like, yeah, that was a real net rating booster if I've ever seen one. But again, they fought in the games where they were so shorthanded that it felt like they had no chance and were competitive. So, like, you know, that feels still pretty encouraging to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's really going to matter is what level are they playing at the end of the year? Like, banking some of these wins and maintaining their positioning in the standings, that's really important. But ultimately, this team is going to be judged on how they finish this season, which is a totally different standard than what I was expecting going into this year. But this is where we're at. So I think going out there, winning the games that you're supposed to win, winning kind of these freebie games and putting them in your back pocket is really important, especially as a veteran Cavs fan that has witnessed Chris Kaman laying down on the bench, taking a snooze. I've seen
I say this? That game, to me, was revenge for that game Trey Waters absolutely murdered the Cavs in the preseason last year.
I like that take. I like that take a lot.
I didn't forget, Trey. I didn't forget. When we were down, you and the Celtics humiliated us. We're back, baby.
Cavs are back.
We got Trey Waters revenge.
Long overdue, but you know what? Better late than never. But we have buried the lead. Speaking of better late than never, we buried the lead, Carter, because the biggest
news... We always do, Justin. We always do.
Biggest Cavs-related news is J.B. Bickerstaff signing an extension that will keep him with the team signed through the 2026-2027 NBA season. I was thrilled to get this news on Christmas. I would say that obviously the Bickerstaff household was a very happy house on Christmas, but I wouldn't call it a gift because I do think that this was something that was genuinely earned by J.B.
I got to add an air horn sound effect to my board. I'm actually embarrassed I don't have one because I wanted to do it and I didn't have anything. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it was well earned. JB has coached through some really adverse situations, to be kind, in his year and a half, I guess now basically two years of coaching. And I think that he has really helped set a culture. And we have been begging for that for years. And the other thing that's really interesting on him is like all the like little peccadillos are just starting to melt away. You know, this idea doesn't play the young guys. Well, he kind of does if they're good enough or if circumstances warrant it. Doesn't shoot enough threes. Cavs had 26 threes in the first half, attempts in the first half against the Raptors. And have gotten there not an admin of enough offense. Well, up to 13th with some crampy personnel to say the least, and their shooters that haven't really shot well outside of Darius Garland and Jetty Osmond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're still top five in the last 15 games. So it's like, what is there even to complain about at this point? Like, I know there are some people that don't love JB, and like, is it just not one to change their minds? Because like all the stuff that I might have poked at him about, I just think it's all kind of melting away. And like the next fate, like I just feel like JB has passed the is he a pretty good coach test at this point. You know, there is another test coming, which we've seen a lot of pretty good coaches fail, which is adapting in the postseason.
Yeah.
And we're going to see how he does in that setting. But like the kind of the culture setting, the expectation setting, the development, all of it's like they seem to be running a pretty tight ship as far as I'm concerned. So it's like I'm just really happy to have some stability in an organization that's needed some for a long time.
Absolutely. And I think because I like to think of both sides of an argument. Obviously, I have my own biases. That's not news to anybody that's listened to this podcast. But I think maybe where some trepidation comes is just the length, right? Like 2027, the longevity of coaches in the NBA hasn't been great over the last few years.
Not my money.
But you know, that's, I mean, that's a simple way to put it. But for me, what's encouraging for me and why I feel good about kind of him being the coach of this team moving forward is that we have seen him adapt to the personnel that's there, right? As more shooting gets added, you see more wrinkles added to the offense. I would expect as Evan Mobley continues to develop as an offensive player, you're going to see more and more stuff run through him, which I think the foundation and the groundwork for those type of changes to the offense moving forward are being set by teaching Darius to play off ball, teaching Colin to play off ball, teaching all these guys what to do when they do and don't have the ball. I think it's laying a foundation for this team to evolve and to continue to modernize their offense as the players grow. But what really jumped out to me when I was thinking about this JB Bickerstaff contract extension is it's kind of a parallel to what they did with Kobe Altman in 2019 when they gave him a contract extension, where I think the messaging was, don't make your decisions based on a looming contract that's up, right? We have confidence in you. We have you in this position for a reason. We are going to remove that factor from the equation. So now you can make rotation decisions. You can make coaching adjustments. You can do all of these things without worrying about a contract. And I think with Kobe Altman, we saw that with taking guys that maybe need a little more time. Darius Garland coming on off a meniscus surgery. Isaac Okoro, who is raw offensive player versus a more ready player like Obi Toppin, which was the conversation at the time. This year, Evan Mobley, who was thought to take more time than Jalen Suggs. I think you saw a more patient approach and making the right decision that these guys believe in. And I really feel like JB being signed throughout this period, it enables him to have confidence in his decisions to not be worrying about this being a factor as he's coaching.
And the reality is, a lot of coaches don't even get to survive the fact that their front offices don't always put them in the best spot. Like, I think Kobe Altman himself would tell you, like, hey, I made things pretty tough on JB with the rosters that were out there because they were young, developmental teams that were basically forced to give a ton of minutes to kids who weren't quite ready to win yet, and then had a bunch of transitional players that were there not because Kobe thought they would fit well around the roster, but because he was buying them for second round picks. Yeah. And in some cases, first round picks. So, you know, JB wasn't given an ideal roster. And a lot of times front offices don't have the foresight to understand that, like, hey, I'm actually making things kind of hard on them. And those coaches get axed anyway. So like the fact that I think the Cavs have kind of seen like, hey, we've seen what this guy can do behind the scenes. And now it's turning into wins. It just makes sense to extend it. And again, like, this ain't a salary cap type of decision. You know, like, if you're worried about longevity, I just think you need to find a different hobby, you know, like, because it's not going to affect, you know, it is, at least for this ownership group, mm-hmm. what they're paying to the front office has never seemed to much affect what they're willing to pay for the players. I'm just not worried about it, frankly. So, like, do I like JB? Yes. Do I want him to stick around for a long time? Yes. Mm-hmm. Thus, I am happy with the extension.
Absolutely. And I also think it's a signal to the players, too, right? Which is, this is our guy. This is the guy that is going to be your voice in the locker room moving forward. So, you know, there has to be this continued buy-in. I think we've seen buy-in from the veterans, from the young players. All of those guys have been sacrificing and doing what is asked of them of the coaching staff. And I think it just simplifies the message. It sends stability. And the reality is, like, I do understand from the perspective of, okay, how much longevity does any coach in professional sports have right now, right? Like, you do find that there's an expiration date when it comes to a voice in a locker room. And sometimes that means moving on from a coach. Sometimes that means shaking things up. You'll see a team bring in a veteran player that hasn't won, that kind of rejuvenates that sense of that hunger to go out there and win. But the Cavs are a ways away from that, right? Like, right now, all of their goals are internal, and they're all aligned too, right? Like, every player on the team, all these young guys want to get better. JB is someone that they have confidence in to help them get better, that they believe in the messaging that's there. And I think that's the absolute most important thing, because, yes, it's possible that the voice grows stale at some point in the future. That might mean roster shakeups. That might mean bringing in new perspective. It might mean adjustments from JB Bickerstaff. But I think it's premature to worry about those sort of things and just kind of focus on, okay, we now have a lot more confidence and a better understanding of what the foundation of this team is. Kobe Altman is the general manager. JB Bickerstaff is the head coach moving forward. We know we have at least three cornerstone pieces in Garland, Allen, and Mobley. And we have a ton of really promising prospects that go along with them that fit well with them. So I think it's another symbol that this team has found some sense of stability. They've found an identity. And I like to see that rewarded. I think it sends a good message up and down the locker room that you buy in. If you're a part of what we're trying to build and you do the right things, you're going to get rewarded.
Yeah, and Waj in the chat just mentioned, feels like they wouldn't have made this move if the players, especially the core, didn't love him. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree. I mean, Darius Garland called him a father figure for this roster. Like, the much maligned, obviously my brain immediately goes to the Kyrie LeBron thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, but like, when it's being offered up by the player, like, hey, this is a person I trust. Mm-hmm. When you say, you don't say someone's a father figure lightly.
Yeah.
You know, that means that's a person that you trust, you know, to you know, both on and off the court. And that kind of trust is hard won. You know, mm-hmm. A lot of these players have played for a lot of coaches, you know, and have been kind of, you know, through the ringer.
Even the ones new to the
process.
NBA that exactly. have been with the Cavs, like Colin
exactly.
Sexton has played for a lot of coaches.
Over the course of their life, their high school coaches, their AAU coaches,
yeah.
you know, like that bond is something really special. So, like, I don't think that Darius would say something like that lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it just speaks to the culture that they're putting together, which is this is kind of a family atmosphere. And by the way, I do think that Kobe Altman needs to consider that culture as he looks to tinker. You know, this has been a great tinkering GM. He's always kind of looking for that next move. He's always making kind of these fractional upgrades around the roster. Now that the team is pretty darn good, mm-hmm. I think we can actually just say they're good.
Yeah.
And now that, you know, the expectation is becoming winning, it is a lot more of a challenging job because he's got to figure out, not only does this move make us better on the basketball court, but is it going to mess up that mojo? Is it going to change the fact that we are currently greater than the sum of their parts? Like, mm-hmm. maybe you get 10% better on talent, but 10% worse on synergy, and it's a net wash or even a net loss because now players kind of feel like, oh, I thought we were a family. So it's a whole challenge. I mean, we literally saw this happen to Danny Ainge and the Celtics.
Yeah.
Where, and obviously, you know, IT was hurt and, you know, there was a lot of contributing factors around that made things harder. But ultimately, this group of young kids that were like, oh yeah, we got this together. We're like, oh wait, we're all available to be traded whenever. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a challenging thing for a GM to navigate, because you also can't rest on your laurels. When you're especially heading into next season. I think this year is going to be the found money season the rest of the way, but like, heading into next year with real expectations on the team, he's got to ride that line of, we have this beautiful kind of balance and this chemistry and this identity versus chasing upgrades for the roster to try to take that next step. And I'm really fascinated to see what kind of, you know, way, what kind of part of the spectrum he leans on.
I'm fascinated by that as well. And I think you're bringing up really interesting points when you talk about considering kind of the culture and the locker room energy, right? Like the mood of the locker room when you're making a move, right? It's interesting to me to monitor how this next generation of NBA players kind of behaves, because they're guys that grew up watching ESPN at post-decision and kind of the backlash to moves made by LeBron, by Kevin Durant, and all these guys. I'm really interested to see kind of how they approach these decisions as they mature as players, right? Like, did they get sick of it the same way some fans did? Do they approach team building and really buy into, hey, like a team is a family and whatnot? Like, I really feel like the next evolution of player empowerment is just consulting players more. Like, everyone understands that this is a business, but making them involved, at least the ones that you're invested in, making it a collaborative process of, okay, this is kind of what we're thinking. We're upfront and honest about you with what our expectations are when you're with the team, what our goals are as an organization, and what adjustments we're looking to make, that sort of thing, and involving the players. I think that that's going to be a really interesting dynamic. There's going to be a give and take between front offices and the players themselves. So how that plays out and how it plays out with the Cavs is really interesting, because they did a great job, from my perspective, of bringing players together that already had some relationships off the court, that are all hard workers, that seem to get along well.
They're like basketball. Helps to like basketball.
That really like basketball. I was watching the Road Back. There was a new episode that dropped. I would encourage everyone to watch it, because it was great. But even someone like Colin Sexton, like, he's working his ass off, rehabbing and whatnot. You hear all the players like still talking about how they want to have him around, how he's still a really valued member of the team and whatnot. Like, that's just such a special thing, and it's not something that I want to take for granted. And as we approach this trade season, like, it gives me conflicted feelings when you look at, okay, what are the options out there? You have to weigh, like, I'm at the point where if you have to debate whether or not something is an upgrade to the roster, I don't have an interest in it, because I think you'd be sacrificing the culture. Like, if you're taking a real swing and it's just a very clear upgrade, and what you are giving it up to make that on-court upgrade is future assets and whatnot, I'm willing to listen to that, to kind of see how that plays out and whatnot. But even something like what we had talked about before the season, like a Jetty Osman for Terrence Ross type swap, I don't think Ross is better than Jetty Osman.
And even if he is, I just don't think it's worth it from a chemistry standpoint.
Right.
And like, and it's worth noting as well, like, I'm sure if there were any, you know, more generalist NBA listeners that were listening to this pod, checking in on the Cavs, I think some of them might be rolling their eyes at this kind of talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this culture, like they would probably say, what culture? You know, they didn't have a culture till this year.
Yeah.
You know, because that is a fallacy a lot of people fall into. And I've teased other writers for falling into it. It was like, oh, you have a culture when you're good, and then when you're bad, you don't have a culture anymore. And like, so I get it, but like, and you know, maybe 2-3 years down the road, after, you know, some of the sheen has worn off, the tenor of the conversation is going to be different. But right now, like, we can only like want to make decisions for, you know, based on the information we have right now.
Yeah.
And the information we have right now is that this team loves each other, mm-hmm. that they are killing teams. They've won.
They really are.
By like an average of 20 points a game in their last 11 wins. So it's like, I'm just not in any hurry for these marginal upgrades. And even like those like mid-level upgrades really give me pause. So it's just exciting. And one final kind of buttoned, you know, to put on this JB combo is, now that he is signed for the long term, I really hope that Kobe is working very closely with him as they make these kind of hard decisions about roster building moving forward, because the reality is your GM's never going to really understand the pulse of the locker room quite mm-hmm. like the head coach.
Yeah.
So, like, I hope that they're working pretty closely in tandem with one another, knowing that, like, hey, any move, you know, this is a delicate ecosystem that they've got built right now. Because, again, I don't think they're winning on obscene talent.
Right.
I think they've got some very talented players, but I don't watch games going, they are just, like, overwhelming teams by how much better individually every player is. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're going to upset that ecosystem, you better do your homework. So yeah. I really do hope that Kobe and JB continue to develop that collaborative relationship moving forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like we are dancing around the latest rumor, which was Woj reporting.
Yeah, let's talk about it. We weren't going to talk about it.
I had it so far down on the topic list, but I think we gotta
hit on it just because we're so on top of it right now.
And also, yeah, the conversation just kind of naturally went there. But yeah, it's the Woj report that the Cavs are a team to watch to become re-engaged with Ben Simmons, which, I mean, that language alone kind of says it all, where a team to watch to possibly become re-engaged with Ben Simmons. Like, there's so much hedging and messaging. You never know where that information is coming from and whatnot. And I know I had said on the podcast a couple weeks ago.
Just to cut through it, let's just remind everyone that rumors can come from a lot of different sides of the aisle. Yep. Just because the Cavs are being mentioned does not mean that the Cavs are the ones that are dishing Woj this info.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might mean that, but I just think it's really important to remind people of the games that get played via reporters like Woj.
I think that is a good addition. What I was going to say is a couple weeks ago, like, I think my stance was, now that we know that we have kind of this core three, that they work really well together and whatnot, I feel like there's less of a need to take a risk and swing for someone like Ben Simmons, who I'm incredibly high on, just in general as a player. It's gone down as this season has played out, just the way that everything has been handled and whatnot. And the other reason why I'm more down on the possibility is, in theory, there's kind of two schools of thought. One, that Ben Simmons can play as a point guard. He can run kind of a heliocentric offense and whatnot. The other school of thought is he can be a souped-up Draymond Green playing at the power forward. And two of our cornerstones occupy those roles, Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. So I would have a lot of skepticism if something like that were to materialize with Ben Simmons. I just don't know how it would work out. I would maybe I would be a skeptic, but you have to kind of give the front office some benefit of the doubt at this point. But really, I just don't see a fit. But at the same time, I'm also not too concerned, because I feel like the Cavs would probably be outbid in any Ben Simmons trade. Like, it's a tricky situation. I just don't see it's just not as attractive to me. As much as I want a big playmaker, he is such a complicated player and such a unique player and such a potential threat to the ecosystem of what they have going on. I don't know how I'd feel about that move. Well, I do know how I feel about it. I'd be concerned.
Yeah, I don't think I like it. I think that you have to look at it from a couple different angles. One angle is the culture. The Cavs have built themselves around dudes who are selfless, Jesus.
Yeah.
That work super duper hard on expanding their games and that love basketball.
Yeah.
And if you hear dings about Ben Simmons, it's that, like, you know, you hear it on pods like Rosillo and the things, like, you know, he'll be like, hey, you know, I always hear from people, don't trust the workout vids that Simmons is posting. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, maybe a little bit love of the fame, not love of the game, steal from our light years friends. I just worry that culturally he's not a great fit. So then you go, okay, at some point you might need to sacrifice your culture for talent upgrades, okay, and for fit upgrades and to solve for team needs. I don't think he solves any needs that the Cavs have, because they need shot creation. They don't just need big playmaking, they need big shot creation from those bigs. When teams are blitzing Darius with length and Evan's game isn't quite set yet, they need spacing. He cannot provide that at all. And I've seen some people in our Discord say stuff like, well, Okoro can't shoot right now. There is a difference, I'm sorry, between a player who at least stands at the three-point line and is a threat to shoot an attempt and Ben Simmons.
Won't shoot is very different than a bad shooter. Like, it just is. And the reality is, it's very, like we've said with many things, Simmons is an extreme example of this. It's tough to make the money work. Like, it's tough to make the money work without including bigger contracts like a Lauri Markkanen or a Ricky Rubio. Guys that the subtraction of them, and it would take multiple parts, which
but
makes
even
your
if
team
you just
shallow.
Added them, like, yeah. Even if you just added them, let's just say in a crazy world, we traded Okoro for Simmons and Simmons was there tomorrow, okay? And whatever draft capital, whatever. But like, you just unplug Isaac and plug in Ben, okay? Mm. Like, I still just feel like there are so many things you have to sacrifice and change. For example, the Mobley Allen forward center pairing, I just don't think works with someone at the three that cannot and will not shoot.
I think
it is devastating for that pairing offensively, which has worked so much better than we thought on the backs of their interior passing ability. Mm-hmm. That gets gummed up even further with Ben Simmons on the floor. Yeah. And I think personally that foundation, that 4-5 is a foundational pairing for them, mm-hmm. an identity setting pairing for them, just as much as Darius Garland. They can do everything else they're doing on the floor because those two can share the floor together. So all of a sudden, if you add a player that makes it so those two can't share the floor any bit together as well as they were, then okay, that's fine. You might be able to find a new identity with Simmons Mobley or Simmons Allen or whatever the new groupings are, but you don't have it as much of a sure thing as we've seen now evidence minute on minute on minute of those two being a group that really can change the tenor of this team moving forward. I'm just not eager to break it up for a guy who is in his career been much more of a floor raiser than a ceiling raiser.
Absolutely.
The floor is already getting high. I don't need more. I'm trading for ceiling raisers if I'm Kobe Altman at this point.
I mean, any player combination right now has just an absurd net rating because the Cavs have just consistently been good and their foundation pieces make it so that you can play weird guys like Lauri Markkanen at the three. I shouldn't say weird guy. I don't know if
weird fits.
He might be a weird guy. He might be fun weird. You never know. Come on the podcast, Lauri. But you know, like you can do weird fits. You can kind of, it affords you the opportunity for Isaac Okoro to work through some of his offensive issues because the defense is so damn good that it buys you those opportunities. So it's a tricky thing. This is one of those situations where I am grateful, even though we are affiliated with the Cavs, that we don't get information because, my goodness, like I like that we can keep the podcast where it's at and whatnot. Like, we can continue kind of speculating and kind of figuring this stuff out.
Do I think that when it's worth noting, just to, I think we both come in pretty hard on the we're not super big fans of trading for Simmons.
Yeah.
I don't think that trading for Simmons makes them worse. I just am not interested in seeing this team be that different because he would make them so different.
It's certainly tricky. And one of the complicated things when it comes to the NBA is you don't have control over the talent that becomes available to you, right? Whether it's the draft, free agency, or on the trade market. The star players that become available on the trade market, there's usually a reason for it. When you are in position to draft guys, sometimes it's not exactly an ideal fit, but you take the best talent available and you try to find ways to make it work. I think Mobley and Allen is an example of that. So it is a difficult decision. The one thing I'll note, though, is us being in the dark here. Like, I there's a bit of a trend. Every time the Cavs have traded for somebody, we had no idea it was coming beforehand. Like, there was no month-long build-up.
And worth noting, we don't get too many sources, but when we do hear rumblings every now and again, and we have not heard every Cavs move has been a surprise.
Andre Drummond, JaVale McGee, Ricky Rubio, Jared Allen, Lauri Markkanen. Like, none of these things were things that were even, like, that there was an inkling out there. There wasn't even, like, a Twitter rumor out there. Like, complete blindside. It's hilarious. It's a lot of fun when we do the reaction podcast. I'm still bitter that you didn't let me do a JaVale McGee reaction podcast because I was so hyped up. But just the fact that the Cavs have kind of run such a tight ship when it comes to stuff like this, it makes me skeptical anytime something like this comes out. I would be far, like, if I had to make an assumption on a Ben Simmons move, I would assume that maybe the Cavs get involved as a third team. Historically, that's kind of what happens when there are these bigger trades. But it's just so hard to make the money work. It would require so many pieces and making a team that's already runs a pretty shallow rotation even more shallow. So, you know what? Like, I'm glad that we addressed this. But at the same time, like, I just don't see how it works out. Like, I would expect another team to come in with a higher bid. I would expect some concerns over the fit long-term with Ben Simmons and kind of the core pieces and whatnot. There's just too many variables and factors for me to even give it a whole lot of brain thought beyond this.
And the reality is, if you want a guy like Simmons, even in a depressed trade market, you're going to have to pay a premium. And, like, I just don't see the point in that. Like, you know, if a player like that falls into your lap, it's just different. You know, Jared Allen falling into the Cavs' lap, you know, not to discount the work Kobe did, but, like, they didn't have to give up much to take a shot at a guy like Jared Allen.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just fundamentally different, and I'd much rather
same with Andre Drummond. Dry. Like, they took a chance on Andre Drummond. I still think it would have been interesting if COVID didn't shorten that season. I thought things were starting to click there. But you know what? Like, that was a smart gamble to make, and the cost was low enough, right, where you're giving up John Henson, Brandon Knight, and a second-round pick. Like, that isn't going to be a franchise-crippling move, and you have to be really careful when you do kind of push all your chips to the middle of the table on who you're doing it for, or how, what level of confidence you have. And I would expect the Cavs to be able to make an informed decision too, because you are talking about a clutch client. It seems like the team has a good relationship. Darius Garland works out with Ben Simmons in the offseason. Like, I feel like they'd be able to get a better read and make a more informed decision than we would be able to make. I'm just, because this rumor came back up, I thought it was worthwhile to discuss, because I certainly would have a lot of skepticism with a Ben Simmons trade.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think we did, like, we backed into discussing it, but I think it was still an important discussion for us to have. Mm-hmm. With that said, let's talk about guys that are on the roster and maybe even some guys who might not be on the roster for too long. Obviously, the Cavs have been playing a lot of folks who were not in their rotation.
Yep.
Prior, and some that weren't even on the team as of late, in both the Celtics and this Raptors blowout. Raptors blowout was a little bit more fun and a little bit more even footed, at least for those rotation, for those kind of replacement players. What do you think of the newbies?
You know what? I thought it was a good performance from them. I thought the Raptors game was a lot of fun. I got some angry texts from my Raptors fan dad who didn't like Denzel Valentine showboating at the half after getting the steal and the dunk. So he wanted a little more humility out of the boys. But you know what? Like, a lot of these guys, like, they have worked so hard for these opportunities. And I think that's kind of the, if I have to look at a silver lining with the weirdness that's hitting the NBA, it's a whole lot of dudes that have worked hard in the G League looking to earn an opportunity. Justin Anderson, a guy that hasn't really had a jump shot for the last few years, and that's kind of been one of the things that's held him back, seems to be showing indications that he has a jumper. You had mentioned when we were discussing him last night that he's probably lost a little bit of athleticism.
Yeah, I feel like he used to be a little bouncier.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? Like, I like the minutes he was giving them. It's nice to see an extended look from Nembhard as well. I thought he looked like a player that understood what he was doing. And I think that's the benefit of coming from the Charge, where you're running the same system and whatnot. He was making kind of the right plays. He's quick. But you know what? Like, just
six assists, I think it was. Yeah. In his very limited minutes, like, he actually had some good playmaking chops. I thought Nembhard really jumped out for me, because when he's played, he's gotten less garbage time than most on this team. I think a lot of those, and I think mostly it's just been luck, you know, in a lot of the games where they have been in some pretty serious garbage time, he's just happened to be down with the Charge.
Nice voice crack.
Yeah, I know.
I had to call that out.
Yeah, thank you. But, like, you know, when he's shown little bursts of, like, competence, and, like, he likes to shoot, at least in the G League. Like, he gets his threes up. He didn't take any in the game, but I really liked his minutes, though he only played 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he played well, but I'm just happy that they're getting this opportunity. I thought it was nice to see Kevin Pangos get a little bit more of an extended run. Like, he looked more comfortable out there, like actually comfortable playing basketball. It wasn't like he was, and again, to give you credit for a point you made last night, it wasn't like he was coming in the fourth quarter trying to protect the lead. Like, it was so out of hand.
Yeah, he was just playing basketball, which I feel like he hasn't empowered really to played. Just
play. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do not think he's just been playing ball.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I thought his playmaking was good. He was taking the right shots, only 2 of 6 threes. But you know what? Like, that's not a guy that I have any questions about his ability to shoot.
No.
But yeah, he looked good out there. So I thought it was encouraging signs. Like, there's not a whole lot you can take away from it. But I do like that in a game where basically every defensive player for the Cavs was out, whether it's Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, all those guys were out, with maybe the exception of Ricky Rubio, that the replacement guys were coming in and they were playing hard. And sure, yeah, you're playing a team that doesn't have a whole lot of chemistry or time together or a lot of NBA players even. But I did like that, you know what, at least there's some continuity. At least you're seeing the little cracks and the light shining through of the Cavs' identity, even with so many players in the health and safety protocols.
Yeah, I did really like watching these guys play. I thought Justin Anderson did have a really nice game on both sides of the ball, plus 31 in his 31 minutes, which is a ton of minutes for a guy like that. Shooting pretty confidently from both wings from three. 4 dimes, 5 boards. I thought he played a good game. He looked like an NBA player out there. Yep. And we said this. We got a question. I think it was on our last spot. It might have been the one before.
Yeah, it was.
Where someone basically says, hey, do you think Justin Anderson might play well enough that he might take, you know, Denzel Valentine's spot? Not after last game. Denzel was, you know, a man on fire. But, like, you know, we kind of said that some of these guys, I think, are going to earn their shot around the league. Mm-hmm. Or even earn a shot back with the team. Like, if the Cavs were to make a 3-for-1 deal, like, Justin Anderson's a guy like, okay, you want to be our 10th, 11th, 12th man? Not the worst thing in the world. So, obviously, super small sample size, but, like, I think it is fun getting to see these guys kind of showcase their skill. But, by the way, your tweet when the Mavericks signed Charlie Brown, and you quote tweeted it with, oh, brother. I laughed so hard. That was one of your best. You uncorked like just an effortless A-plus tweet, and I was very proud of you.
It was like a Denzel Valentine corner three. As soon as it touched my hands, I was letting that thing go. Yeah, I think that's a really smart point, and that's probably something we're going to see around the NBA is just a reminder of how much talent is in the G League and how much talent is available. It might make teams more willing to do consolidation moves. It's at least something that's going to be in the background of their heads. Just an understanding that, hey, we can make moves because there is replacement talent available. I think it's a great showcase for the G League and just how hard those guys work. So I do think there are benefits. And you know me, I'm always looking for the upside, even if it's not directly related to my team. I'm trying to find the positive in everything. So I do think that it's a really good opportunity. And it does seem like, at least with the Cavs, it's probably going to be a shorter opportunity for some of these guys because the NBA did make some changes to their COVID protocols. The NBA shortens quarantining to 6 days if testing shows they are no longer at risk to be infectious based on the viral load. This probably comes based off the change of the CDC recommendations of 5-day isolation to people if they are asymptomatic. So obviously it depends. Every single situation is different. Whether or not a player is asymptomatic doesn't necessarily mean that someone's going to be coming back after 6 days, because someone like Isaac Okoro, who was out of protocols, was not eligible to play against the Raptors because he hadn't passed the conditioning test. So there's still a lot of unknown and a lot of variables that go into a player's return. But it is interesting now that kind of quarantine period for NBA players has gone down from 10 to 6 days, and kind of backtracking that and looking at some of the Cavs that are in health and safety protocols, we can probably start to see some of these guys return to the lineup this week.
Yeah, and it's really, really exciting. And it's a complicated conversation, right? Because you don't want anyone to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
But if the league was going to have a COVID problem this year, and a lot of players were going to contract the virus, and, you know, obviously hoping for everyone to have very minimal or no symptoms at all,
Yeah.
So with all that couching and obvious stuff aside that you still have to kind of make clear, a big mass outbreak that kind of messes things up for 2 weeks is or 3 weeks, especially with these new guidelines, is about as good as you're going to get. I mean, a lot of these rosters are basically walking out of this with herd immunity. Yeah. I mean, the only three players on, I guess there's four, is Pangos, Wade, Garland, Rubio. Those are the four.
Maybe.
That either way, like a lot of these rosters have already kind of taken the brunt of this on the chin. And like, I think it really will, you know, with that, you know, increased immunity post having COVID, you know, it should kind of clear the way. Obviously, a lot of people have grumped about the quality of play that has been on the floor. I just feel like it's kind of the best road, you know, like short of like a crazy amount of cancellations and stuff like that. And we don't have to get too far into it, but ultimately, I do think that it we're going to see really good basketball the rest of the way, even though this, you know, 2-3 week period has really stunk. Like, there's no way around it. But like, I do see the light at the end of the prospective NBA tunnel.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm inclined to agree with you because I think what's happening to the NBA isn't isolated to the NBA. Like, this is the world as a whole. Like, we're seeing really dramatic.
I'm quarantining
spikes
with my daughter right now because we had an exposure. Luckily, right. none in the house, but like, it's everywhere right now.
Right, and I mean, like, it's, you kind of hope that it's just a really big, bad, dramatic spike, I should say, that's short-lived. And I'm hopeful that it will be short-lived and we are going to see good basketball moving forward because there's a lot of interesting matchups, and it's probably not going to break out fair for every single team, like games lost versus games won in this situation. There's no real way to do that. The thing about professional sports, the only fairness that exists is the fact that you get another game, whether it's this year or next year, you get another opportunity to go out there and win the games that are ahead of you. So
can I read out before we move off this, can I read out a pretty crazy stat that I just saw?
Go for it.
It was tweeted this morning, so it's probably old news to you because you catch everything way before I do. But starting tonight, the NBA will set a new record for number of active players in a season.
Wow.
That have suited up.
I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, there were 540 in 2021, which was the prior high, matching 2018. And we're already at 539 heading into tonight. Which is, you know, like, we're at the midway point in the season, which is pretty crazy. So, like, yeah, it's wild. It's different. It's not the way we would do it. But, like, it's also, like, it, you know, most of these teams that have been just ravaged are going to be getting right relatively soon. And, yeah, you know,
Trey Young's back. He's playing tonight. The Cavs are going to play the Hawks later this week. I'm really looking forward to that. I'm hoping both teams are relatively healthy for that, because that's going to be a really exciting matchup.
Think any seasons have been derailed. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the thing. Like, there were seasons last year that I think just straight up got ruined by COVID.
Yeah, I think the Raptors I feel bad for because they got straight up kind of hit last year with COVID, and this year they fell off after OG Anunoby went down with a hip issue, and he just came back to the lineup and then got COVID, and it reminds me of Dylan Windler, who finally got his opportunity to play, landed on his head and then got COVID. Like, just the worst luck possible. But like, that's the type of thing that's really hurting Toronto as they're looking to compete for the play-in. But I agree, like, just because it is so widespread around the NBA, you hope that it kind of breaks out to even. But, you know, if they can at least get healthy for the rest of the season, we still have over half the year ahead of us. I'm really intrigued to see how it goes. And a lot of the most meaningful matchups for the Cavs are still ahead of them. I said before we recorded that the Cavs play Chicago three times this year, still left three times this year. That's going to be really, really important for standings and positioning. They play Atlanta, obviously the postponed game, and then a game later this week. Like, a lot of these matchups that are going to matter a ton for positioning are coming later in the year. So my hope is that both teams on both sides of these games are healthy and that we can actually use them as a litmus test and get some information from those games.
Yeah, I think we're getting close to normal, and I'm really excited. But we're almost into the new year. It's wild to think we're not at the halfway point yet, because it feels like we've had so much basketball already.
Yeah.
But, you know, what are you kind of looking for heading into the new year? Like, do we expect this team to kind of continue holding steady? Do we expect any dips? Like, where do you kind of see this team progressing as they get healthy?
I think they're going to continue trending up. Like, there may be aspects of the team that have some sort of natural regression, but I think they're insulated from that by the fact that the schedule is getting so much easier. They are going to have the easiest schedule from here on out the rest of this year, just because so many of those tough games were front loaded. So I think it's a really good opportunity from them. And what I'm looking for is what I talked about a little earlier when we were talking about the evolution of JB Bickerstaff and his offense. You would expect young guys to get better as the season progresses. Historically speaking, looking at guys like Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, these are guys who their best times of every season they've played so far are the back half. I want to see what that growth looks like from those individual players, see if we get more internal growth, and as that growth comes, assuming that it does, what this coaching staff does with the talent that they have, because it's going to be ever-evolving talent. I think we started to see that stretch where Mobley was scoring about 20 points per game, seeing him kind of use more as an offensive focal point to create for himself and others. I want to see if that growth starts to become more and more frequent, if those high watermark games for the young players become more frequent, and what the coaching staff does with the talent that they have.
Yeah, it'll be fun watching this team. Which, you know, the least charitable interpretation of what those players have done late in the season is that the other teams are starting to shut it down a bit.
It's possible.
And those guys have gotten to kind of heat up. What are they going to look like when they're competing for a playoff spot against teams that have shut it down a bit?
Yeah.
You know, you kind of can earn some really easy wins late in the year. So it just feels like they're going to keep getting better. And I keep trying to adjust my brain to what their final record is going to be. And if they trend the way they've been trending and they stay healthy, could they win 50 games?
Oh my God. You know, like we're sitting here 20 wins. Like that is more than they won the first 2 years of the rebuild. And obviously shortened season was one of them, but man, it doesn't feel completely outlandish, which itself feels outlandish, right? Like the fact that we're discussing that possibility.
To me, 538 is projecting the Cavs to finish 47-35, by the way.
Man, it's going to be maybe closer than I'm thinking right now. Like they're in a really good position to do that. And my focus has been more on the standings themselves and kind of where they're going to land within that versus a win total. But maybe I should start thinking about win totals a little bit more. Like that hasn't even been a thought that's crossed my mind, because the only win total I've had focus on was that over underline, because
26 and a half. I think you can rest easy, my friend.
I think I'm going to be cashing in on that, but before the end of January. So, you know what?
You want to hear some other numbers from our dear friends at 538?
Go for it.
What percent playoff chance do you think they have?
93%.
83%, but still pretty good.
The haters, I'm taking this as a slight, Carter. The fact that they have us at 83%, I'm taking it as a slight.
Now, here's what I'm trying to understand. In the current discourse, does playoff mean just getting into the final eight, or does it mean top six? Like, is play in a different number?
I think they're probably factoring in the existence of the play-in, because if you drop to 7 and 8, there's a possibility that you lose those two games and drop out, which at that point, I think we decided that you are not a playoff team, because the Golden State Warriors did miss the playoffs last year with Steph Curry and two max players in Draymond Green and Andrew Wiggins, and I don't think we should ever let that slide.
Yeah, I don't think we should either. By the way, I was fiddling around with 538, and much in the spirit of this podcast, parroting stats that make our team look better that we don't understand, you have an option to choose your forecast based on Raptor player rankings. That's what I was reading off. I don't know what Raptor means. Or you can show
Raptor playoff rankings is
player.
The metric that determines how likely you are to crap the bed in the playoffs.
Oh, Jesus. You're annoying.
Thank you.
But the other option is the ELO forecast. And I've heard of ELO before, but I still don't know what it means. What are the Cavs' percentages of making the playoffs there? And what is the, give me their projected record, their projected chance of making the playoffs, and their chance of making the finals on
ELO. Just give it to me. I'm not here to play this game.
51-31 projected record, ooh, a 94% chance of making the playoffs, and an 18% chance of making the finals.
Cavs Warriors 5, baby. People keep talking People keep talking about how this is the Eastern Conference Warriors and the next dynasty on the come up.
Many people are saying
they really are, and I'm excited to be a part of that. I am excited to be a part of that. And then the question becomes: do we get rings if they win? That's the real thing, Carter. That's the logical next part.
There's no way any Cavs employees are still listening at this point in the live, but. But just quietly let us know, yes or no. We won't tell anyone.
Blink
we'll
twice.
Keep it to ourselves.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah. Just blink twice on the next weekly call if we get rings.
I mean, they have like a whole year and a half to figure that out, right? Like, I think let's be realistic. It would be the 2023
it's probably next season.
Yeah. You know, let's stay a little bit grounded here.
We're out of pocket. We got to wrap. We're being stupid now.
Well, if everyone is still listening and enjoying our stupidity, I appreciate you. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so when you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.